Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter Telegram Weekend Edition for Saturday, November 11th, 2023. Oil prices slide 4.2% in another tough week. Crude prices endured a second tough week as concerns over global demand took center stage amid signs the Israel-Hamas war has not affected supplies from the Middle East. After sliding 5.9% last week, West Texas Intermediate fell an additional 4.2% this week on the New York Mercantile Exchange. WTI fell 2 of 5 trading days, but those 2 days wiped a combined $5.50 off the futures price. WTI regained its footing, adding $1.43 or 1.9% Friday to close at $77.17, down from $80.51 at last Friday's close. The posted price ended the week at $73.65, according to Plains All American. After enjoying a positive week fueled by cooler weather, natural gas futures slumped this week, falling all 5 trading days on the NYMEX. Trading opened with a 25-cent slide, followed by an additional 12-cent fall Tuesday. Henry Hub on the NYMEX ended the week at $3.033 per MCF, down from $3.515 at last Friday's close. Jack Weeksel, Senior Director, East Daily Analytics, warned that producers could see prices at the Waha Hub in Reeves County go negative in the coming week. Quote, it's very speculative, but there is planned maintenance on the Gulf Coast Express pipeline Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, which will curb some eastern flows, end quote, he told the Reporter Telegram by email. Gulf Coast Express Pipeline sent a notice to customers that, quote, due to necessary inspections and planned maintenance of compressors at Rankin, Devil's River, Waha, and Big Wells compressor stations, the total capacity on GCX will be reduced, end quote. November 14th and 15th will see capacities reduced to 1.2 billion cubic feet. November 16th through 17th, capacity will be reduced to 1.35 BCF, and November 18th through November 30th, capacity will be reduced to 1.6 BCF. Weeksel noted that maintenance on other pipelines is also beginning to ramp up. An analysis on the outlook for crude oil markets since the outbreak of the Israel-Hamas war by Jim Burkhardt, Vice President and Head of Research for Oil Markets, Energy, and Mobility at S&P Global Commodity Insights, found market fundamentals remain remarkably stable, despite the uncertainty and potential for volatility. Growth in non-OPEC plus supply, decelerating demand growth following China's 2023 reopening, and sizable OPEC spare capacity point to a well-supplied market in coming months, Burkhardt wrote. Non-OPEC plus supply growth alone will be sufficient to meet world oil, total liquids, demand growth in 2023, 2024, and 2025, his analysis says. While total demand is expected to reach new highs each of those years, the pace of demand growth will decelerate following this year's 2 million barrel per day increase as the impact of mainland China's reopening fades. Supply restraint by OPEC Plus will remain key to maintaining oil prices above $80 per barrel in 2024 and above $70 per barrel in 2025, the analysis says. OPEC Plus crude production in 2024, excluding Iran, Venezuela, and Libya, is expected to be 500,000 barrels per day lower than it was in the 2023 year. MC Grad serves military veterans with music therapy. David Mills didn't start reading music until he was a junior at Midland High School. However, today he relies on music to earn a living. He doesn't play in a symphony orchestra or have a band. Instead, Miller uses music to manage a range of psychological and physical conditions and improve quality of life for those who served in the United States military. He is a music therapist for the Department of Veteran Affairs at a Veterans Community Living Center in Amarillo. Quote, the center is an assisted living center, so the patients whom I see are elderly, end quote, Mills explained. Quote, many are suffering from dementia and terminal illnesses, and I use music to help maintain and improve their quality of life. When I play the guitar and sing a song that they know, it helps them to remember things from their past. It also relaxes them and lowers blood pressure, end quote. Mill said that he played the guitar off and on from the time he was 12, simply by ear, but was never serious about it. At Midland High School, he played football until his junior year when he quit football and joined the choir. His choir instructor, Jeff Fendham, encouraged and helped him to read music for voice purposes, and in 2012, he took some piano lessons. When he was 17, he sang as a tenor in the Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale, now the West Texas Symphony. Quote, after high school graduation in 2014, I enrolled at Midland College, but still never considered music as a career, end quote, Mill said. Quote, however, then I took music appreciation from Dr. Rabban Bewley, and that class was amazing. It really flamed my interest in music. I remember talking to my Midland College math teacher, Linda Penny, about how I really enjoyed music, and she suggested music therapy as a career. When I mentioned it to my mother, she reinforced the idea. So I did some research and discovered that I could use my talent and interest in music to help others, end quote. Mills graduated from Midland College in 2017 with an Associate of Arts degree and transferred to West Texas A&M University, WTAMU, in Canyon. He said that his research led him to WTAMU because of their renowned music program, including music therapy. Quote, it was at WTAMU that I really developed musical abilities, end quote, Mills recalled. Quote, I graduated with a bachelor's degree in music with an emphasis in music therapy with an instrumental track. When I'm working with patients, I prefer to use the guitar and sing, but occasionally I play the piano and auto harp, end quote. After performing more than 1,000 hours as an intern in San Angelo, where he worked with people of all ages with disabilities under the mentorship of a private therapist, Amy Rogers, Mills obtained national certification as a Music Therapist Board Certified, MTBC. Prior to his current position with the Department of Veteran Affairs, Mills worked at Northwest Behavioral Health Center in Amarillo, an acute psychiatric facility. Quote, when I discovered an opportunity to use music therapy to work with military veterans, I jumped at the chance to be able to help this population, end quote, Mills said. Quote, there is a myriad of benefits to music therapy services that bolster recovery, rehabilitation, and resilience with veteran populations across treatment domains, such as psychological, neurological, psychological, and social. I first visit with patients and find out what kind of music they enjoy. For most of my current patients, it is 50s rock and roll, old school country, or gospel. I usually start by pulling up a song on my tablet computer so that they can hear the music with the original voice recording. We listen to the song together and discuss the emotions and memories the song elicits. Then I will play and sing along and encourage them to join. Sometimes I'll play a little bit of the song and then they will want to stop and talk about a memory that the song triggered. At other times, they just want to close their eyes and listen, end quote. Mills said that while he currently works with senior citizens, music therapy is also used with the very young, such as children who have an autism spectrum disorder for whom the music and rhythm can help to regulate emotions. He explained that while he was working at Northwest Behavioral Health Center, he has also used music therapy for teens to reinforce playing instruments as a replacement behavior to self-harm, such as cutting. Quote, music is processed and produced through a different pathway than verbal speech, end quote, Mills explained. Quote, bypassing that verbal pathway allows patients to express themselves, communicate with loved ones, and experience the world more vibrantly, end quote. According to the American Music Therapy Association, using music therapy to help veterans is not new. Modern music therapy was first used after World War II when community musicians visited hospitals to perform for veterans. The soldiers seemed to improve both physically and emotionally, eventually prompting the institutions to hire professionals for the job. It is very rewarding at that moment when art and science come together to create an awareness, an accomplishment, a breakthrough, end quote, Mills said. Quote, I'm fortunate to be able to have that moment with those who have served our country. Mills and his wife, Melissa, have been married for almost 5 years. They first met when they were attending Goddard Junior High in Midland, and were friends throughout their junior high and high school years. Romance blossomed when they were students at WTAMU. Melissa has a degree in psychology and is working on a master's degree and credential as a licensed professional counselor, LPC. In his spare time, Mills enjoys, of course, playing the guitar, but his song genre of choice when he isn't working is heavy metal. Art Studio hits the spot. Tucked away on Illinois Avenue sits a small brown brick house with a bright blue door. A driveway-turned parking lot borders the front and back entrances. Inside, Denise Malm and Beth Dixon showcase artistic passions. Known as The Spot, the gallery and studio serve as the duo's escape from reality, a safe space for them and other Midland artists to freely express their creative abilities, display and sell them to the community, and collaborate with like-minded individuals. Yet The Spot's inception didn't come from a lifetime of practice and friendship. After meeting at the Palette Club a few years ago, Denise and Beth realized they shared a lot in common. Both were rookie painters, both wanted to establish a place for the art community, and both of their husbands wanted them to move their in-house studios out of the guest room. Quote, "We wanted to try to find a place that other people could come if they wanted. Once a month, we have a whole art club of different levels that meets, and they come out with some really great creations," end quote, Denise said. Through these meetups, guests not only learn different Denise and Beth techniques, but also teach and inspire the pros on new ways to cultivate their art. Quote, "I usually don't sit down with a plan of what I'm going to paint that day," end quote, Beth admitted. Quote, "I'll hear a song and it brings up a memory, and I just start throwing things. This color will go with this, this with this. It's like painting by emotion. I also take a lot from my travels. I spend a lot of time in Santa Fe, and I love the people and the landscape," end quote. Quote, "I'm the opposite. I think it's from my background in teaching, but I can almost obsessively plan out things," end quote, Denise explained. Quote, "A lot of the times I overwork my projects and literally have to have somebody else tell me it's done. I gravitate towards portraits, and I always say, do you have a good sense of humor? Because you have to if you want to get malmed," end quote. Other events hosted at The Spot include birthday parties, programs for local groups such as the Boys and Girls Club, vendor pop-ups, guest artist demonstrations, and any other fun Midlanders pitch to Denise and Beth. With community remaining as the top priority, the pair said they always look for different ways to be involved with art-loving and supportive neighbors. Together, the two women have formed a place completely unique to other galleries around town. Every time someone walks through that bright blue door, they can expect to be greeted with open arms and a familial feeling of comfort and acceptance. When it's time to leave, just like all family members, you'll exit through the back. Quote, "Art is expensive, so it's nice to have a place where you can come, meet somebody, experiment, and it's exciting and interesting," end quote, Denise stated. Quote, "You don't have to be perfect to do anything coming in here. We just want to have fun and learn something," end quote. Want to check out The Spot? You can find Denise and Beth from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday at 1407 West Illinois Avenue. Want to get your art featured? Email bethdixon-marz@gmail.com or call 432-249-7899. Midland is a great place to fail and try again. Jackson Burns, guest columnist. Nearly a decade ago, as a 24-year-old, I shared an opinion in this paper that was difficult to admit. Midland seemed to be a city on the fringe of appeal for young professionals. Much has changed in those 9 years. Today, at 33, as a happily married math teacher and a father of a beautiful 2-year-old girl, my perspective has certainly evolved on almost everything. Life's roller coaster in the oil patch has certainly been interesting. But while some things change, others stay the same. There's an air of improvement in Midland for young professionals, and I can attest it is possible to meet someone, fall in love, and start a family in Midland, although many challenges, such as the high cost of living, remain. Despite these hurdles, the sense of place does seem to be on the uptick. However, an undertow from the swell of bond information and opinion brought a misleading narrative that Midland is a tough sell for young families. To that, I say we need to be better salesmen, having grown up here and now raising my own family here. I can attest that Midland is, has been, and hopefully will always be an exceptional community for families. Starting with MISD's reputation, I believe the doomsaying is grossly exaggerated. The district boasts gems like Carver Center, ranked number 8 among all Texas elementary schools, and Early College High School, ECHS, ranking in the top 0.5% in the state, where every student graduates with an associate degree. That's the top half of the top 1% academic education in Texas if a student attends both, which all students in Midland have an opportunity to do. I challenge you to name another city where that level of education is even possible. I have no doubt that these institutions will turn out some of the best engineers, doctors, and business professionals in the state. Legacy and Midland High are steeped in culture, history, and lore, offering some of the finest extracurriculars in the state. They are not just cultural powerhouses, but also harbor top 25 athletic programs, embodying the spirit of the Midland community. Outstanding leaders like Blake Felt, Wes Torres, and Amanda Lopez, and coaches like Thad Fortune and Clint Hartman, deserve credit for building and continuing to build high-achieving programs. Now, with new facilities in the works, there will be no doubt that they will provide a world-class high school experience. The bond is certainly not perfect because democracy doesn't work that way. Democracy is a slow, messy process of stumbling in the right direction instead of going straight forward to the wrong one. Make no mistake, the passage of the bond is 1.4 billion stumbles in the right direction. Under the steadfast leadership of Dr. Stephanie Howard, who has worked tirelessly, MISD has somehow limited educational losses experienced across the state from the lockdown and also continues to make up ground faster than the rest of the state. MISD is certainly headed in the right direction under this leadership, and all signs point for it to continue for the foreseeable future. If you know the history of Midland, you know just what a feat it is to pass a bond, let alone a record-setting one. Also, let's not forget another outstanding former Lee principal, Stan Van Hooser, who led a well-organized and effective pro-bond campaign that built broad community support. I think most people have a deep sense of societal unraveling, or at least unease. Certainly, one can admit not everything is rosy. An inverse yield curve and several economic indicators point to a looming recession. Midland also suffers from a nationwide misplacement of environmental concerns that have resulted in the underfunding of our oil and gas sector for at least the past 5 years. Midland was also not immune from the combination punches of inflation, then monetary tightening with rising interest rates. On top of all that, Midland suffers from a socialist school funding system that redistributes 30% of its tax revenue, despite serving a rising number of economically disadvantaged, poor students. These are all true, but Midland still has the lowest unemployment in the state, and while MISD certainly has had failures and struggles in this underfunded boomtown environment, it still has done better than most. I personally have failed many times for many reasons, ranging from somewhat my fault to completely my fault. But even when I fail, I always end up better off. I don't think that happens everywhere. I call it failing upwards. It's like getting fired from a coaching job in college and then landing an NFL job. The key is getting back up, a skill I learned growing up in Midland. In fact, Midland has often proved it a great place to fail. Everyone who comes here fails in some form, from George H.W. Bush to Eric Winston and Woody Harrelson. Their work is full of failure and setbacks, but yet they go on to have great triumphs. Midland and MISD are getting back up. If trouble is ahead, there is no place better than Midland to absorb the hardship and bounce back. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. If the world unravels, Midland will hold to a fray. Not just because of our resource-based economy, but because of the people. The people of excellence in every field whose spirit led them here in chase of opportunity. I find the people who are used to getting punched often get back up the fastest. Well, Midland and MISD have taken some punches, and here they stand. Recently, after meeting up with friends and neighbors for the annular eclipse at the planetarium, and after navigating the multitudes of young children at play, running between the museum and the park, I managed to get astronaut John Harrington to sign his children's book for my daughter. He wrote, quote, "Live your dreams," end quote. If your dream is to be a family man surrounded by economic opportunity, what better place than Midland, Texas? The realization that such experiences will be enhanced with the potential addition of a zoo and brand new high schools only further solidifies Midland. Midland is not just a waypoint, it's a destination. a place where families can root themselves in solid economic ground, supported by a school district and community that defies expectations. As a teacher, a parent, and a resident, I have never been more convinced of Midland's capacity for greatness. The sky is no longer the limit. I say we shoot for the moon. We will certainly fail, but I'm confident it will be upwards. We stand at the precipice of a new era for Midland, marked by educational triumphs and community development. With the support of its residents and the dedication of its leaders, Midland is not just good, it's great, and together we're making it even better. I promise to try to make it a little better every day. Hopefully you'll do the same. I'm just one of more than 3,000 who are educating the future. I am MISD proud. Master Gardeners, what is a food shed? As master gardeners, we are both interested in raising some of what we eat. AgriLife Extension has taught us how to make that possible, from amending the soil to harvesting healthy food. A new Master Gardener class begins in January, and registration is now. Visit westtexasgardening.org to register. What about what we don't grow? Are healthy options available from local growers? I, Emmy, grew up in a northern community where summer food produce was locally available. All summer long, local farms had food stands where the best food products, from early spring greens to fall pumpkins and squashes, were available. When I moved to Midland 40 years ago, I bought from retail stores, but that slowly changed over time with the advent of local farmers markets, and even until 2018, local community-supported agriculture, CSA, options. Now, many of us enjoy weekly or monthly local food markets with a wide variety of seasonal produce, from artichokes to zucchini, and locally produced meats and cheese. Around the country, there has been a growth in sourcing food grown or raised in a sustainable manner. But could that be happening here? The answer is yes. One of the leaders in this effort is Ogallala Commons, a nonprofit education and leadership organization that reinvigorates Commonwealth to build vibrant Great Plains communities. These communities in the High Plains overlie the Ogallala Aquifer, which unites 8 states from the Midland-Odessa area to South Dakota, almost the Canadian border. One of their goals has been to rebuild local food systems. In 2006, through social media, they have been bringing awareness to and celebrating local food production. See myfoodshed.org/about. They have divided the geographic area above the Ogallala Aquifer into food sheds based on the idea of a watershed. We are in, no surprise here, the Permian Basin food shed. If you have visited any of our local farmers markets, you know the breadth and variety of the food products available. Each week we can choose from local cheese, meats, eggs, and mushrooms to flowers, vegetables, fruits, and baked goods, all locally grown. It is a joy to be able to thank and shake the hand of the person who has produced your food. We have written previously about our local farmers markets, but on November 15th, you might have a chance to hear about our local foods in person when Ogallala Commons hosts the Permian Basin Field Day in Tarzan, the home of Flying Y Farms. The event will provide information, ideas, and inspiration for food producers and gardeners who want to grow in the Permian Basin region, as well as networking opportunities to support successful growing and marketing of local food. For more information, contact Daryl Birkenfeld at daryl@ogallalacommons.org. Register online or see the full agenda at https://bit.ly/48PO C A H. And Debbie and I are going and looking forward to seeing you there. If you have questions, call the AgriLife office in Odessa at 498-4071 or in Midland at 686-4700. Additional information and our blog for access to past articles is available at westtexasgardening.org. Click on Resources. Faskin teacher seeks books, math manipulatives. Ms. Scott, a teacher at Faskin Elementary School, is seeking books and math manipulatives for her students on donorschoose.com. The project expires December 3rd. There is $837 needed to fully fund it. Quote, the supplies you help provide could be what sparks a student's love of learning. This is my first year in a new school and new grade because of this, my classroom could use some additional supplies to help ensure student success, end quote, Scott posted. Donate online, donorschoose.org/project/ms-scotts-classroom/762531/. MISD. Content coordinators provide academic consistency. Teaching Texas required curriculum doesn't come without questions from teachers. Luckily for them, Midland ISD's content coordinators are here to help. To be a public school district in the Lone Star State means following the required Texas Essential Knowledge and Skills, TEKS, curriculum standards for several subject areas such as math, science, reading, and social studies. Quote, TEKS is the baseline of instruction for all public school teachers, end quote, said Brittany Allen, science coordinator. Quote, as coordinators, we make sure teachers have the support they need to not only teach students the required content, but also implement opportunities for collaboration, so teachers can work with each other and share ideas, end quote. The need for support and collaboration is something she knows all too well. A former legacy high school science teacher herself, Allen says being able to consult with a content coordinator gives reassurance that you're on the right track. Perhaps the most important aspect of a coordinator's duty is to ensure there is academic consistency across all campuses. Quote, as students advance in grade level, they need to have proficient knowledge in key areas, no matter which teacher they had or which campus they come from, end quote, said John Wilkes, social studies coordinator. Quote, we make sure teachers aren't going at it alone when navigating TEKS and curriculum resources the district has adopted, end quote. As the overseer of social studies, Wilkes facilitates curricula from kindergarten through 12th grade in numerous areas: history, geography, government, civics, sociology, and psychology. Quote, we even have a philosophy class in high school, end quote, said Wilkes, who previously taught at San Jacinto Junior High for nearly a decade before joining the content coordinators team this year. Teachers can directly contact content coordinators with any questions or ideas they have. Quote, the coordinators provide a direct line of support for teachers, so teachers don't have to figure it out on their own, end quote, said Andrea Messick, Executive Director of Teaching and Learning. Quote, there is no fail until you see progress. Instead, content coordinators give teachers the help they need right away, end quote. But coordinators aren't teachers' supervisors. Rather, they serve more as advocates, liaisons, counselors, and translators of sometimes confusing state standards. Quote, it can be tough navigating through state requirements and keeping up with changes, end quote, Wilkes said. Quote, so we do research on teachers' behalf and relay it back to them, as well as adjust our guidance to reflect any changes, end quote. Being a teacher can certainly be frustrating at times, but content coordinators are there to support. Quote, communication isn't one way for us, end quote, Allen said. Quote, listening to our teachers is incredibly important. They're the boots on the ground, and the more feedback we receive, the better, end quote. Ector County, two die in car crash. Two people died Wednesday in a two-vehicle collision on Interstate 20 in Ector County, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that Rene Cardona Jr., 35, of El Paso, was traveling in a 2008 Chevrolet Impala on the I-20 service road near mile marker 106 when he lost control, crossed over eastbound I-20, and entered the westbound I-20, colliding with a 2020 Hino truck. Cardona and the passenger of the Hino truck, Angelina Romero, 52, of San Jacinto, were transported to Odessa Medical Center Hospital, where they were pronounced deceased by medical staff, according to DPS. The driver of the Hino truck was also transported to Odessa Medical Center Hospital in stable condition. The collision happened at 9:21 p.m. DPS reported Romero and the driver of the Hino truck were not wearing seatbelts, according to DPS. Life Tributes. Jimmy Ruth Hayes Curry. 7/24/1930 to 11/2/2023. Jimmy Ruth Hayes Curry, 93, of Midland, died peacefully in her home on November 2, 2023, surrounded by her family. Private services will be held in Garden City, Texas. Jimmy was born July 24, 1930, to James and Ernestine Hayes in Loveland, Texas. Jimmy is survived by two loving daughters and their families, daughter Cynthia Bill Howard and their children, Stephen Katie Howard, Christopher Rachel Howard, and Richard Megan Howard, and daughter Darla Craig Taylor, and their children James Grace Taylor and Will Bailey Taylor. Jimmy was blessed with seven great-grandchildren who will miss her: Curry Howard, Elizabeth Howard, Holt Howard, Wesley Howard, Hardy Howard, Harris Ann Howard, and Evelyn Taylor. She was preceded in death by her husband, James Curry, her brothers, Joe Hayes, two sisters, Jean Nunley and Maxine Woodard. Jimmy will be greatly missed by all. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials be made to First Presbyterian Church, 800 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Midland Bible Church, 5900 Whitman Drive, Midland, Texas, 79705. Midland Memorial Hospital, care of Jimmy and James Curry Endowment Fund, 400 Rosalind Redfern Grover Parkway in Midland, Texas, 79701. Or Samaritan's Purse, P.O. Box 3000, Boone, North Carolina, 28607. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Janet Free Stoltz. Janet Free Stoltz passed away peacefully on November 8, 2023, in Dallas, Texas. A visitation will be held in Midland on Tuesday, November 14th, from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, 3800 North Big Spring Street, Midland. A private family burial will be held at a later time. Janet was born on July 14, 1930, in Evanston, Illinois, to Russell and Gracia Free. She is preceded in death by her husband, Dean, and her daughter, Susan Tyree. She is survived by her son, Gary Stoltz, and wife, Pam, and her daughters, Candy Stoltz and Julie Noreen, and husband, Charlie. Her grandchildren include Christopher Tyree, Trevor Stoltz, Sawyer Stoltz, Berkeley Stoltz, Alarcia, Jenny Reese Jones, Chandler Spivey, James Noreen, Shelley Tucker, and John Noreen. In addition, Janet had nine great-grandchildren who all wore the same christening gown that the grandchildren wore before them. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the charity of your choice. Jose Rainey Rene Reyes Sr., 1-14-1939 to 11-8-2023. Jose Rene Reyes Sr., Rainey, 84, of Midland, Texas, passed peacefully on Wednesday, November 8, 2023. Rene was born and raised in Marfa, Texas. Rainey is survived by his sons Ronnie Reyes, Jose Rene Reyes Jr., Michael Glenn Reyes, and daughter Laura Lynn Madrid. Daughter-in-law Lourdes Reyes and son-in-law Henry Madrid, all of Midland, Texas. 16 grandchildren and 21 great-grandchildren. Sisters Dorothy Perales, Nancy Pena, Mildred Rodriguez, and brother Silverio Reyes. Rainey is now in God's grace and reunited with the love of his life, Graciela Veloz Reyes, his parents Raimundo Reyes and Florine Dutchover Reyes, his brother Raimundo Reyes Jr., and sister Erlene Stevens. A viewing will be held at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, Monday, November 13, 2023, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary at 7 p.m. Funeral Mass has been scheduled for Tuesday, November 14, 2023, 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Pallbearers will be Ricky Reyes, Jesse Almedo, Eddie Portillo, Marty Garcia, Frank Juarez, and Raul Galindo. Honorary pallbearers are Rocky Reyes, Marcus Reyes, and David Reyes. Kristen Renee Brown, 10-17-1980 to 11-11-2023. Kristen Renee Brown, 43, of Midland, passed away on Friday, November 3rd, 2023, in Midland. A celebration of Kristen's life will be at 10 o'clock a.m. on Saturday, November 18th, 2023, at Stonegate Fellowship in Building F, 6000 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, Texas, with Reed Townsend officiating. Services entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. Ida Clarice Paxton, 11-6-2023. Ida Clarice Paxton, 96, of Sherman, Texas, and formerly of Midland, Texas, passed away Monday, November 6, 2023, after a short illness. The family will receive friends for visitation Tuesday, November 14, 2023, from 1 to 3 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home, 4616 North Big Spring Street. Funeral services will be held privately. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Billy Barnhill, 11-8-2023. Billy Barnhill, age 94, of Georgetown, Texas, passed away on Wednesday, November 8, 2023. The family will receive friends for visitation on Wednesday, November 15, 2023, from 10 o'clock a.m. to 12 o'clock p.m. at Ellis Rest Haven Funeral Home and Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street. A graveside service will follow at 1:30 p.m. at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton. Please visit ellisfunerals.com to leave online condolences. Jose Angel Sacida, 11-9-2023. Jose Angel Sacida, 63, of Midland, passed away Thursday, November 9, 2023. Viewing will be Sunday, November 12, 2023, from 10 o'clock a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 o'clock p.m. Sunday evening at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel, 405 North Terrell Street. Funeral service is set for Monday, November 13, 2023, at 2 o'clock p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral service is under the direction of Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at heavenlygatefh.com. Minerva Monhe Mora, 11-7-2023. Minerva Monhe Mora, 65, of Midland, passed away Tuesday, November 7, 2023. Viewing will be Tuesday, November 14, 2023, from 10 o'clock a.m. to 9 o'clock p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 o'clock p.m., Tuesday evening at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel, 405 North Terrell Street. Funeral service is set for Wednesday, November 15, 2023, at 10 o'clock a.m., at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Funeral services under the direction of Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at heavenlygatefh.com. Life Tributes, James L. Limbacher, 11-21-1941 to 11-5-2023. James L. Limbacher, age 81, of Midland, went to his eternal home with his Lord and Savior on Sunday, November 5, 2023. Jim was born in Baltic, Ohio, on November 21, 1941, to Doris and Carl Limbacher. Jim was preceded in death by his parents and his brother, John. He leaves behind to cherish his memory his wife, Peggy, son, John Limbacher, and wife, Amy, of Austin, Texas, son, Jeff Limbacher, and wife, Ricky, of Midland, Texas, daughter Jennifer Therwanger and husband Lindy of Millersview, Texas, grandchildren Lauren Goldsmith, Megan Therwanger, Matthew Jordan and wife Courtney, and Bryce Limbacher, great-grandchildren Briley Goldsmith, Trinity Jordan, Madison Jordan, and sister Shelby Fanton of New Philadelphia, Ohio. In addition, he leaves behind a niece, nephews, and many friends. Friends are invited to visit with the family on Monday, November 13, 2023, from 5 o'clock p.m. to 7 o'clock p.m. at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. A funeral service will be held Tuesday, November 14, 2023, at noon at Bellevue Baptist Church in Midland, with Pastor Raymond Revilla Jr. officiating. A burial will immediately follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Honoring Jim by serving as pallbearers are John Limbacher, Jeff Limbacher, Lindy Therwanger, Matthew Jordan, Manuel Arellano, and Bob Merritt. Donations can be made in Jim's memory, in lieu of flowers, to the Bellevue Baptist Church Benevolence Ministry. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Billy Ray Spruill, 12-8-1933 to 11-3-2023. Billy Ray Spruill was a beloved husband, father, grandfather, and great-grandfather during his 89 years of life. He passed away peacefully the evening of November 3, 2023 in Midland, Texas. Bill was born in Waco, Texas, to Virginia and John Spruill on December 8, 1933. He is preceded in death by his father, mother, three brothers, and a sister. He is survived by his wife, Charmaine, daughter, Cheryl Netherland, and husband, Bobby Netherland, son, Scott Spruill, sister, Frances Carminati, granddaughters, Lauren Alford, and husband, Grant Alford, Natalie Sledge, and husband, Zach Sledge, Stephanie Basem, and husband, Robert Basem, 13 adoring great-grandchildren, and nieces and nephews. Funeral Mass will be offered at St. Stephen's Catholic Church at 2 o'clock p.m. on Monday, November 13, 2023, followed by interment at Fairview Cemetery in Midland, Texas. A rosary will be prayed before Mass beginning at 1:30 p.m. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home. Exchange Club to recognize trio from Fasken Oil. Three Fasken Oil and Ranch employees are being recognized for their efforts to prevent high-level nuclear waste from being stored in the Permian Basin. Tommy Taylor, Monica Perales, and Stani Pollock will receive the Golden Deeds Award from the Exchange Club of Midland at a banquet Monday evening at the Petroleum Club. The three have worked more than 5 years to prevent high-level nuclear waste from being transported to a site near Andrews, just 64 miles from downtown Midland. Recent court decisions have found possession, transport, and storage of high-level nuclear waste by non-U.S. government entities or individuals is unlawful, keeping the waste out of Texas. The three have now filed a lawsuit against the proposed high-level nuclear waste facility on the Eddy and Lee County line in New Mexico. Quote, although multiple individuals working initially for the benefit of and to protect the Fasken family and their interests, this truly is a golden deed effort and the results to the benefit of the community and future communities as a whole, end quote. Earl Sabring wrote in nominating the trio for the award. Rig count slumps for second consecutive week. Drilling activity continued the slump it has experienced throughout the year, falling for a second consecutive week, but the movement downward seems to have slowed. Oilfield Services firm Baker Hughes said the rig count it has issued weekly since 1944 slipped 2 rigs to 616, the lowest level since February 2022. The count is 163 rigs, or 21% below, the 779 reported a year ago. The number of rigs seeking crude oil also fell 2 rigs to 494, the lowest level since January 2022. The number is 128 rigs below the 622 drilling for crude last November. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas was unchanged at 118 rigs, 37 fewer than the 155 counted last year. Likewise, Texas slumped 2 rigs to 302. 71 rigs less than the 373 at work across the state the previous year. New Mexico added 1 rig for 105, Louisiana 3, and Pennsylvania 1 joined Texas as producing states to see decreases, while Ohio 1, Oklahoma 1, and Wyoming 1 joined New Mexico in seeing increases. The Permian Basin was unchanged at 310 rigs, 40 fewer rigs than the 350 drilling across the region a year ago. Lee County, New Mexico, remains the most active county in the Permian Basin, with 56 rigs, down 2 for the week. Eddy County, New Mexico, is second with 47, up 3 and the biggest increase among Permian Basin counties. Martin County reported 41 rigs, down 1 for the week. Reeves County gained 1 rig for 30 rigs at work within county lines. Midland County also added 1 rig for 24. Loving County posted the sharpest decline among Permian Basin counties, falling 3 rigs to 22. Ward County reported 13 rigs for a third week, and Glasscock County had 12 rigs for a fifth consecutive week. Borden County saw renewed activity with two rigs going to work within county lines. Enverus Foundations, part of the Energy Focus software, as a service firm Enverus, said its U.S. rig count reached as high as 703 during the week ended November 8th, up by 17 rigs from the previous week. The count is up by 29 rigs, or 4%, in the last month, but down 184, or 21%, year over year. In the last week, all major plays tallied increases except the Gulf Coast, where a two-rig drop brought the total to 79. The largest increase occurred in the Permian with an addition of four rigs to 304. The Anadarko and Williston basins each added two rigs to reach 52 and 37. The Appalachian and DJ basins increased by one rig each to 39 and 19.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram's oil report for Saturday, November 11th. Testing impact of produced water on vegetation. Texas Pacific Water has set up a lab dedicated to advancing beneficial reuse of produced water. The story was written by Mila McEwen, oil editor. Far out in South Midland County lies a facility dedicated to advancing beneficial reuse of produced water. Housed in Texas Pacific Water Resources testing facility are three rows of glass cases with native plants and soil from Midland, Loving, and Reeves counties, and planted alfalfa. The glass allows researchers to see not just the plants, but the soil and water drainage into the soil. The plants receive water treated to 500, 1,000, and 1,500 parts per million of total dissolved solids to see how they react. Quote, "We want to be able to perform daily and weekly testing, see how dry the plants like to get, how much water they need," said Craig Holzhauser, principal with Cornerstone, which is working with Texas Pacific Water on the project. The alfalfa likes to be watered twice a week, quote, "which is fantastic," he said. "The native plants actually don't like that much water," end quote. The goal, said Robert Crane, executive vice president with Texas Pacific Water, was to be able to show how much water is applied, how much is kept at the roots, and how much water is needed. His company has partnered with the New Mexico Produced Water Research Consortium and Texas Produced Water Consortium on the research. Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright has long been interested in efforts to use produced water in applications outside the oil patch and toured the facility earlier this month. Quote, "We had issues with injection and seismicity," he said, "just a week before the 5.2 magnitude quake struck near Mentone. Beneficial reuse will be the first step in addressing seismicity as well as the amount of water produced alongside oil and natural gas, which will only increase as the proportion of water rises as wells age." Wright sees the test facility as the first step leading to larger land applications in the future, and he said he was thrilled to see Texas Pacific Water take the initiative to take that first step. Quote, "There have been a lot of conversations, but I'm excited to see action and initiative," Wright said. When he talked about a pilot program, quote, "This is what I imagined. Take the soils and see how they react. This is more exciting for me than anything I've seen at the Railroad Commission," end quote. It's a process of educating regulators, legislators, and the public about produced water and the work being done to convert it to beneficial reuse, Wright said, vowing to help Texas Pacific Water obtain needed permits both from the Commission and Texas Commission on Environmental Quality as the project advances. The next stage will be a 15,000 to 20,000 barrel per day plant that will apply the company's technology to a larger field. The plant, to be built in Reeves County, is expected to enter operation in the summer of 2024, Crane said. The test facility has shown water can be reintroduced into the water cycle, he continued. The next step is to discharge the cleaned water. Quote, there are two types of discharge, directly into waters of the U.S. and aquifer recharge, he said. The Railroad Commission is responsible for issuing permits for land applications requiring the water be kept in the root zone. Quote, what this trial has shown is how much water stays in the root zone, he said. We've shown great results so far, end quote. The TCEQ is responsible for discharge permits. Quote, this is produced water, which is seen as a waste, but it's also a huge opportunity, said Holzhauser. Water has become a much more precious resource over the last 5 or 6 years, end quote. BlackRock invests $550 million in Oxy's DAC plant in Ector County. The story was written by Miller McEwen, oil editor. Occidental's $1 billion direct air capture plant, Stratos, under construction in Ector County, just got a significant show of support. Occidental, through its 1.5 subsidiary, and BlackRock, announced a joint venture whereby BlackRock will invest $550 million in the project through a fund managed by its diversified infrastructure business. The investment signals that the technology is attracting capital to support the plant, said Vicky Holub, Occidental president and chief executive, during the company's third quarter earnings call. In a statement announcing the joint venture, Larry Fink, chairman and chief executive officer of BlackRock, stated, quote, BlackRock is proud to partner with global energy leader Occidental to help build the world's largest direct air carbon capture facility in Texas. Occidental's technical expertise brings unprecedented scale to this cutting-edge decarbonization technology. Stratos represents an incredible investment opportunity for BlackRock's clients to invest in this unique energy infrastructure project and underscores the critical role of American energy companies in climate technology innovation, end quote. Richard Jackson, president, U.S. Onshore Resources and Carbon Management, reported that construction is about 30% complete and is on schedule to be operational by mid-2025. He added that ongoing work in the Innovation Center has unveiled opportunities to lower costs in future DACs, but will also be incorporated into Stratos. Ken Dillon, Senior Vice President and President, International Oil and Gas Operations, said both construction and engineering are going well. He estimated 150 skilled tradesmen on site now, with employment expected to ramp up to about 1,200 by the first quarter of 2024 during the construction phase. The plant will employ up to 75 once operational. He also estimated 90% of the needed material has been procured. Holub praised the vendors who are part of the supply chain. Quote, the visionary vendors, she said, as we interviewed and selected vendors, the visionary ones realized the importance of doing something to benefit the world. End quote. Mike Avery, president and general manager of 1.5, told analysts he is seeing a lot of momentum in the market as companies realize how DAC can fit into their portfolios. Quote, direct air capture is not in the future. The technology is ready to go and is more affordable than you might think, Avery stated. Stratos is designed to capture up to 500,000 tons of carbon dioxide per year, utilizing technology that captures CO2 directly from the air and storing it securely underground. Avery said between 65% and 70% of capacity has been sold through 2030. Carbon removal credit purchase agreements have been reached with a range of customers from Airbus to Amazon, the Houston Astros and Houston Texans, to TD Bank Group and All Nippon Airways. Holub noted that not only can the technology provide carbon removal credits to these companies, but others in industries that are hard to decarbonize, like heavy transportation. She said the company will also use its extensive expertise in using CO2 in enhanced recovery projects to produce low-carbon or zero-carbon fuels for aviation and marine fuel needs and other energy needs. Quote, direct air capture will play a more important role in our assets, she said.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.